We've got figure skating fans. Welcome back. It is episode number 7 of Ice Talk, the figure skating podcast from Ice Network. I'm Nick McCarville, your host. I'm here to talk you through the week. I've got a couple great guests this week joining me. John Coughlin, 2-time pairs champion from the U.S. He's going to be on the line with me. And then Caitlin Osmond. The timing could not be better to have Caitlin on the show. She is a first-time Grand Prix finalist. What a weekend she had in Beijing at the Cup of China. We're also going to look ahead at next week at NHK Trophy. We're also going to look ahead at NHK Trophy and what's to come this weekend as we get closer to that Grand Prix final. First, the man of the hour, John Coughlin. Welcome to Ice Talk, John. Good to have you back.
Hey, Nick. How are you? Thank you.
You must have done something right the first time around, John, because we invited you back to the show.
Well, I've been looking forward to it. It's been a wild Grand Prix season, that's for sure.
Absolutely. So before we dive into what happened in Beijing this last weekend, John, just update me and update people on what you've been up to. I know you're busy calling stuff on Universal. I know you did some Ice Network stuff at Skate America. It's hard to find where you are in the world.
Yeah, I have to look at my schedule to make sure I know which city I'm in. I did do some Ice Network coverage at Skate America, and then I covered Skate Canada, Eric Bompard, and then Cup of China for Universal. So in between that, I did the Disson Holiday Show, which will air in December twice. And tomorrow I leave to go do a Black Friday show down in Dallas at the Galleria Mall for Macy's. So on the run.
Nice. That's just is exhausting me hearing about it.
Good to be busy.
Oh, well, also busy this weekend were some of the best figure skaters in the world at Cup of China. Just sort of top of the line, John, I want to hit on with you what we saw from Ashley Wagner, which was not the weekend I think that she wanted or really any U.S. figure skating fan wanted. And then looking at the weekend that Maya and Alex Shibutani had, they had a great win in the dance. Patrick Chan came back as well, winning in men's. And then we've got John Coughlin on the line. So, John, of course, I want to talk all things pairs. The Chinese pairs teams really flexed their muscles, I think, this weekend. And I really want to know from you sort of how they shake out on the international scene. But first, let's talk about Ashley. She finished sixth place, which is sadly the worst Grand Prix finish of her career. But talk about your impressions you saw from Ashley and where you felt like it really went wrong for her.
Well, that's the thing about Ashley. A finish like that is shocking because she's become a consistent force on the Grand Prix circuit. I think she's qualified for 4 or 5 Grand Prix finals and always been around the medals at the final when she does qualify for it. So I understand that this was a shocking finish for skating fans, and you could tell from her reaction after the short program when she kind of said thank you for the score because she felt like maybe she was undeserving.
There was some sarcasm
definitely some shock in the free skate.
Right. I was surprised at her surprise, though, because she didn't put in a triple-triple. There was a triple-double in that in the short program. And so I felt like, you know, I'm no one to sort of be the X's and O's expert, but I felt like she was overly surprised at both those scores. It just wasn't really her weekend, John. And does it concern you at all that she does have those off weekends, or it's just going to come with skating and that's that?
No, not at all. I mean, Ashley's a friend of mine. I reached out to her right afterwards, and we chatted a little bit, and she said that it was kind of one of those out-of-body experiences and not at all how she'd been training. But that's something that happens to her once in a while throughout a season. I mean, we have to remember that she skated to a world silver medal as the U.S. bronze medalist.
Yeah.
So I don't think that one – you know, one competition is indicative of the trend for the season for her.
She is no stranger to social media, took to her Twitter and said, I work too hard to skate like that. I also will take this for what it is and move on. See you all at Nationals. Now, she's on the bubble, John, for Grand Prix Final, but it pretty much appears that she's looking towards Nationals. And now you've got to think a little bit of, well, who goes into Nationals overly confident? Polina Edmonds has been injured all season. Gracie Gold has had a struggle of a Grand Prix, and it really looked like Ashley was going to arrive the one clear and far away the favorite, but I think China sort of, at least for me, feels otherwise now.
You know, I had that in my notes that if everything shakes out how it should, Ashley could very well be the first alternate to the Grand Prix final on the virtue of having a first, which the first tiebreaker, of course, is highest placement. So that really speaks to how impressive she was in her win in Skate America, that she's still even in the Grand Prix final conversation with that showing in China. But be that as it may, I'm not overly worried about Ashley. I think that was more of a blip on the radar than a theme for her. You have to know that Gracie Gold is going to show up and be more of a fierce competitor at the U.S. Championships. That's something that she holds very dear to her heart, and you know that she's going to give Ashley a run for her money. But there are other people in the event that want to make a splash and want to try to make a world team. We have to remember there are three spots up for grabs, and we haven't seen much of Paulina. You have to throw Mariah Bell into the conversation.
Yes, you do.
Karen Chen, if she has a couple of hot skates, she could affect the standings. We're going to see Mariah Nagasu, who you can never count out.
Courtney Hicks.
There are a few. I mean, Angela Wang just had a great skate at sectionals. We have Carolyn Zhang coming back to competition. So there are some big names that could definitely shake up the standings.
Yeah, John, I mean, we've been so used to the last, three, almost 4 years at Nationals. It's been all about Gracie and Ashley, and they haven't necessarily finished 1-2 every year, but they really are the top two going in. But I almost feel like it gives the rest of the U.S. women confidence to say, hey, Karen Chen and Courtney Hicks did not have the weekends that they wanted either in Beijing. But you look at Mirai, she's coming into NHK this weekend, as is Karen Chen. And I would think, listen, These are our top two women, and I've got a shot to beat them. And I think Mariah Bell really felt that way when she performed the way that she did at Skate America, too.
I think that's absolutely the case. And you can kind of fly under the radar when you have that epic battle between the two leading ladies. But like I said, there is that third spot, and we're getting close to an Olympics. So this will be an exciting year, because I think there are going to be three or four ladies that have that here I am skate to try to state their case to make a world team. If you want to be that third lady, if we're going to go ahead and say, just based on resume and track record, that it would be crazy to not see Ashley and Gracie on this next Olympic team, there's still that remaining third spot, and it has to start at the U.S. Championships. You want to be at Worlds the year before, or you're fighting a really uphill battle
absolutely.
To make that Olympic team.
Right. All right, figure skating fans, you got to get your popcorn ready for Kansas City in January. Now, this weekend, Cup of China, the women, Elena Radionova winning with a 205.90. Caitlin Osman, she's joining us in a few minutes here on Ice Talk. A second place that put her into the Grand Prix final. And then Elizaveta Tukhtemisheva, she came through for the bronze medal. Of course, Ashley Wegner was in sixth place. Now, John, looking at someone like Caitlin Osman, I want to jump over to her for a few minutes. And she's someone that had that injury in 2014. It wiped her out for perhaps an entire season. Now we're starting to see these fruits of labor come back for her. And she earns the first Canadian woman spot at the Grand Prix final since 2009.
And I think you hit the nail on the head that took her out for almost a full season. And it was a slow climb back for her to get into this form that we're seeing now, to where she's so, so commanding of the triple-triple and really all of her technical content. When I watch her skate, I don't feel like I'm on the edge of my seat or, seeing her be one element away from disaster. She seems to be very in control. Even when she had that error on the double axel and kind of double-threed out of it, it was an error. It wasn't something that was distracting to the program. And the program itself, especially that short program, just has such a fun, loving personality. You just find yourself cheering her on. And that's really been the thing for me with short programs this year, is the programs that connect with the audience seem to be doing a lot better. And that's definitely one of them.
And I think she's got to take confidence. Not only did she, she didn't skate her best by any means this weekend, coming in with a 196, but that 196 coupled with her 206.45 in Canada, that's two of the top eight scores in the world this year. So I think to deliver on one weekend is one thing, but now she's done it again. And what I want to ask you about too, John, is to have an injury like she did, because it was a serious one, how much do you have to really sort of trust the process in coming back? Because she came back last season, not too early, but she was obviously not quite the Caitlin Osmond that had won two Canada national titles prior. And I really am guessing, I want to ask her about this too, you've got to have patience to make sure that you allow yourself to go through the whole process.
It's so important to trust in a recovery plan. And it is either hard or easy based on when that injury happens. Because if there's hope that you can get back in time for, say, a Canadian Championships, or if it's the Grand Prix, depending on what time the injury happens, it's very tempting to rush back. You know, I went through that with my hip surgery, and you know, we were told that if we were ready, that we would be named to the World Championship team. And so that was good in a sense, because it made every day feel important, and it almost made me feel like I didn't have enough time versus feeling like here I am stuck in this recovery purgatory, never to be seen or heard from again. I was so focused on trying to get back to competition. But then there comes that moment when you have to decide if it's better to take that extra time and miss that competition that was your carrot out there, or to go ahead and go for it. Because as a judge told me once, when you come back from an injury, the judges panel won't say, oh, they're injured, they're coming off of injury, let's cut them some slack. All they're going to do is compare you to when they saw you last and say, are they still that good, or have they lost a step? So it's a very important decision to make, especially coming up toward an Olympic Games.
Well, and I also just have to say, I enjoy the maturity that she brings to the ice. I think there's a certain fluidity, and you know, she's someone that looks and feels like an athlete out there, but I also don't feel like she's working for it. And it doesn't feel as though, as the viewer, that she's working for it. And I've been impressed by those changes that she's made in the last couple of years. And I think now we've kind of got another top woman to talk about on the international stage. She wasn't even at World. She missed out on that spot by a tenth of a point at Canadian Nationals last year.
I enjoy her presence on the ice too, and I find myself using the word charismatic to describe her, which is not a word that I often use to describe a lady skater. There's just normally different descriptive words that I use for them, but for some reason charisma is what she seems to have out there. There's this kind of intangible, like, quiet confidence and self-assuredness that it's very endearing when you watch her skate.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's stay singles. Let's stay in Canada. Patrick Chan also collected a medal this weekend. First place, coming back after being down after the short program. Jin Boyang, the young Chinese skater, faltered a little bit in that free skate. He finished in second. Sergei Voronov of Russia was third. Max Aaron, the American, was fourth. He missed out just by a couple points, John. But Patrick Chan, up 13 points from Skate Canada from what he did a few weeks ago. The triple axel looked great, I thought, in the free skate. That opening quad-triple combination was huge. We saw him again try that quad saukow. It didn't go the way he wanted it, but we had him on the show last week, and he's talking about continuing to push himself to do that jump, and it seems as though whatever Marina Zueva is saying to him and whatever they're doing in Michigan, it's really working for Patrick right now, John.
Yeah, and I had a chance to call some events with Tracy Wilson and with Tanith White.
Perfect.
And both of them commented on the fact we all just kind of felt that Patrick seems like he's in a better mental place, even just in watching how he interacts with Marina in Kiss and Cry. I think it was in Skate Canada when he missed that. I think it was a triple loop. Or did something about the loop, and Marina commented about that, and he laughed and said, I know, I thought of you as soon as I did it. So to kind of have that self-deprecating, humble nature in the Kiss and Cry after having a tough skate at Skate Canada was really nice to see. It's a tough thing to add a new quad, especially when you've been kind of set in your technical content for a while. You know, you look at people that have added groundbreaking elements. If it's a throw quad with Duhamel and Radford, or you know, a quad twist with Semeca and Kinnearum, of course, I'm relating it to my discipline. There's
sure.
always a learning curve with how to not only execute that element, but not expend so much energy on it that you then can't finish the program. And I think that's what we saw at Skate Canada. It had been a long time since he'd gone out and had that roller coaster of adrenaline right before you try something you've never put out in front of a huge crowd.
Hmm.
And that's why there was some popping that was uncharacteristic for him.
Yeah.
The difference here this week was that, you know, he had the same error on the quad sow, but the rest of the program didn't suffer for it. And it was really exciting to see his technical score be up over 100. I think he was at 104 points technically with the fall on the quad sow, which tells you that if he can hit that quad sow, he's going to be in the conversation with those leading technical scores
right.
in the world.
Right. Well, and John, he also, I mean, his 279 is the fourth best score of the season. And I think he doubled a triple Lutz in the short program as well. So he left points out there, right? He's got points that he can still make up. And he said last week when he was on Ice Talk, he feels like when he's skating his best, now that he's a full, you know, we're talking about comebacks, he's now in the second year of this full comeback. He feels like he's one of the guys. And I feel like he's proved that this Grand Prix season. We know with Patrick, it can be very mental, but I think that's the point you're making, is that the mental approach seems even stronger. And right now, all of the lights are green for him to attack and to continue the way he's been going at the Grand Prix final. And then we'll see what he can do at Nationals and Worlds.
Well, and we have to acknowledge who he's training alongside now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I
That's
talked
a good
to
point.
Charlie White last week, and he said that, you know, watching Patrick and Nathan Chen train on the ice together has been a really special thing, because they're both exactly what the other one needs right now, right? You know, you have
It's so
Patrick,
true.
Who's the consummate component skater, who, if you know, if I had to take somebody from the ground up and teach them basic skating, I would just say sit at home and watch Patrick. And, you know, vice versa, Patrick needs to join this arms race that is the quad jumps right now, and he's seeing it every day in the rink. So to have them working so well together, as I understand they do, has got to be a brilliant thing. If we're talking about grabbing your popcorn, I would love to go watch that practice session.
Yeah, I mean, he said as much when he was with us last week as well, John. I want to move back over. Let's go to dance. Maya and Alex Shibutani, a comeback win of sorts. They were down half a point after the short dance, winning over Caitlin Weaver and Andrew Poget. And I think the Shib-Zibs, you know, for them to win both their Grand Prix this year, they're flying into the Grand Prix final. It's the fourth of their career, but they've yet to have a Grand Prix final medal to their name, John. And it seems to me the last couple of seasons that they've chosen to raise the bar for themselves. And I feel like you can see the results paying themselves off on the ice.
Yeah, I agree. You know, the coming into Skate America, I felt that their short dance compared to their free dance, as far as preparation and comfort level, I felt that the short dance was further along. I enjoyed the free dance and saw what I thought it could become, but I thought the program tailed off a little bit at the end of the free dance versus the short dance just blew me away. I felt like that just shocked me with how comfortable they were in that style and how much they must have immersed themselves into that style of movement to get to that point that early in the season. But last week, I felt like the free dance made a big move to catch up to my sentiments about the short. So, I mean, they look great. And I was really wondering if the lightning in a bottle that they captured last year with that perfect music and that perfect venue and home ice at the World Championships was something that would be hard for them to replicate, or maybe replicate isn't the right word, that they could grow beyond. But they seem to have found a style of movement, that more modern lyrical movement, that just really suits them and allows them to skate free. And I'm a big fan of theirs this year and what they've been able to accomplish.
Yeah, I thought their short dance, I felt like in Beijing, was just so light and effortless, and the connection between the two of them, it really feels like they've put in the hard yards since Skate America to make it what it is. What I'm curious from your perspective too is, how does an athlete, or how do you sort of switch gears? I think you and Katie probably had to do it when you became a new pair, but they were for so long second, third, fourth best, even in their own training rink, but they've really flipped a switch. And I'm curious, you know, how do you get yourself out of one place in your career and sort of graduate to a new one? Because that's what I feel like they've done that, right?
Right, and I think you have to look in the mirror. You know, at the end of the day, you're the one that has to hold yourself accountable to, am I staying in that comfort zone, that safe place where I know I'll get a, I'll have a reasonable expectation of result, or do I want to step out of that box and have some risk in my career? And I think there was a feeling there for a while that the Shibs were trying to do what they thought people wanted them to do, or portray a look that they thought people wanted them to have. And that may or may not even have been the case. They would have to speak to that. But, you know, when they finally got to that place where they are the number one focal point in their training camp, they looked in the mirror and said, you know what, this isn't going to be the peak for us, and found a new look. And, you know, from what I've heard about them, they really, really immersed themselves in the style of movement, especially with that short dance, more so than I've heard about other people doing it. And I think that's paid big dividends for them.
Absolutely. Well, let's move into your wheelhouse, John Coughlin, here on Ice Talk. We'll talk a little bit about the pairs event this past weekend and then move into NHK this coming weekend. But it was really a chance, I think, for a lot of people on the international scene to see the Chinese, the best Chinese pairs. They went 1-2 on the medal stand, Yu Zhaoyu and Zhang Hao, and then Peng Chang and Jin Yang. Now, I guess I'm just curious on your take of it overall, John, and Zhang Hao is, to me, just such an incredible presence out on the ice, the look that he gives. But these are two pairs that flip-flopped. They switch partners, and, you know, now we're seeing, I think, them really come into their own. And will they, can they sort of push the top pairs in the world?
Yeah, this was something that I was eagerly anticipating, because
I'm sure
the flip-flopping of the teams was kind of this unapologetic science experiment that the Chinese Federation went through. They didn't really make any pretenses about it or have any backstory, and I feel like, you know, there would have been some sort of nuclear winter in the U.S. if we had attempted to do something like that. But they basically said, we think the attributes of these two teams would be better suited in this order, and that's what they did. And it's hard to argue with them because, you know, I was sitting there commenting on the event, and you have Bin Yao on one side and Hung Bo Zhao on the other side. And all I could think to myself was, well, if they told me to do something like that, I would probably have to really think about it, because they know a thing or two about the discipline. But, you know, Hao Zhang is you said it, he has a huge presence on the ice. He has such a respect and the discipline because he's been at a high level for so long. He's so physically intimidating, and I mean, I'm a big guy, but he's much bigger than I am, that I'm always impressed at his intent to grow on the component side. You can see him trying to soften his look, and
yes,
that's not as easy for him as it is for some of the smaller skaters. And I really felt, especially in the free skate, that there was more attention to the component from him than I'd seen in the past. So that was nice to see. It was interesting on the technical side to see them do a triple twist at a level four that was so big that it actually gained the same points as a quad twist level three. So they actually already have their quad element in the program by default because their triple twist is so amazing. But to me, the team that really stands out, and I think of them more as the team of the future, just because I guess Hao Zhang's longevity and the discipline makes me feel like they're the team right now, was Peng and Jin.
Yeah.
And I just feel like they have a wonderful presence on the ice, a more Zhen and Zhao natural component to them. They seem to have a very natural chemistry. You saw her kind of pat him on the head at the end of the free skate, which was a very tender moment where they were celebrating how they did. I really feel like they're the sleeper to be the number one team. I know that you and Zhang had the bigger finish in the free skate and overall, but I look for Peng and Jin to be the number one team moving forward.
Well, and I love that you bring that up, too, because this was their first Grand Prix of the season. It was really the first time we saw them on the international stage. They head to Japan this weekend. I mean, they've got 13 points on the books. They're going to get to go head-to-head with Megan Duhamel and Eric Radford. There's no better way to mark yourself or to see, you know, where and how I'm doing. I'm curious, why would they backload? Do you feel like they were perhaps not ready? It's very rare to see someone go week five and six in the Grand Prix.
Well, with the depth of the Chinese in the discipline of pairs, you know, as a member of the pair community, you're never in a hurry to go skate at the Chinese Grand Prix because they're allowed that extra entry being the host country.
Hmm.
So I think it was important for the Chinese Federation to put those teams head-to-head and really kind of have an early Chinese nationals to see where they were at. Which I think it was a brilliant strategy. It allowed them to kind of get a barometer of how well that science experiment we talked about is going. So from a selfish standpoint, I was happy that they did it. And you have to remember, you know, China and Japan is not a big travel.
Sure.
So
right.
Really them going back-to-back there isn't as tough as you might think.
Yeah, when we saw Javier Fernandez, he did it earlier this week, or earlier this year in the Grand Prix, as did Aliona Savchenko and Bruno Massot. So when we look at the pairs international scene, I think very much this season it's been Duhamel Radford, Savchenko Massot, and then you've got to throw Yevgenia Tarasova and Vladimir Morozov of Russia in there as well. But I think this was the weekend that we saw the Chinese very much claim their place on the international scene. They've never obviously gone away. They've been a powerhouse for a long time. But how now, John, do you see things shaping up the next few months? As world is by no means around the corner, but we're starting to feel things shape out this season.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting that you brought up Savchenko and Massot because, you know, there are rumblings that she has some sort of foot injury. I think she mentioned as much on social media related to some of these throws that she's been doing. So I wouldn't be shocked if they elected not to go to the Grand Prix final and decided to focus instead on the World Championship. So that would free up another spot in the Grand Prix final because you have to figure, you know, Duhamel and Radford will qualify as the number one team.
Right.
Peng and Jin
yep.
should get in there too. And then, whoever's the first alternate at that point needs to be on high alert to be ready for Grand Prix final. But you look at some of the performances we've seen with free skates over or around 200 points. There are six or seven teams that can touch that number right now. And you have to remember, we don't know the status of Stolbova and Klimov. Semeca and Kinnearum are training well and should be ready for the U.S. Championships. And then Sui and Han, we're not sure what the status is on them. So the depth of the pairs this year is mind-boggling to me. And you have these teams that it feels crazy to call like a Denny Frazier or Ilya Shchedkina and Moskovich a fringe team because they skated so well. I mean, if you have Lubov and Dylan landing their jumps, they might very well be qualifying for the Grand Prix final on the merit of everything else that they're doing. So, you know, 1 through 10 at the World Championships is going to be a wild ride.
Before we head to NHK, how do you see it? I mean, Denny and Frazier have probably been the most consistent force for the U.S. team. I think that Marissa Castelli and Mervyn Tran did not have the Grand Prix series that they wanted. But when you look at Kansas City on the pairs scene, are you hearing also that Alexa and Chris are planning to be there too?
Yeah, from what I've heard, Alexa and Chris are training full speed again and have circled the U.S. championships as their return to competition. So I would expect them there without any limitations, and it'll be the big showdown between, you know, them, Kane and O'Shea, Denny
right.
and Frazier, and Castelli and Tran. You know, they have time to regain some momentum. They had kind of a bizarre hiccup on a lift in the short program at Skate America, but they have the entry in NHK next week to kind of reestablish some momentum, and then plenty of time to get home and workshop some things before the U.S. championship.
Yeah, of course. So as we switch gears here, John, Kanan O'Shea heading to NHK in Sapporo this weekend. Peng Chang and Jin Yang, who we saw, we were talking about the Chinese team. And then, of course, the big dogs, Megan Duhamel and Eric Radford. How does that pairs feel? I mean, there's obviously more teams. Those are the three that I've pulled out. How does the pairs field look to you? And I also am curious about the challenge that Megan and Eric kind of have to offer themselves each week to make sure that they're staying atop what they're doing, because even when they're given a good challenge, it feels as though they're sort of head and shoulders above everyone else right now.
Well, Megan and Eric are kind of in uncharted territory, right? They are at this place, and I've said this on the air a couple times this year, there are a few teams out there that can go out and pretty much in their sleep go level four across the board on all of their elements that are rated in that manner. And when you can go level four through everything, it gives you a higher floor for your program. Mm. And then you can afford to be more ambitious with your high-value jump passes, your quad throws, throw triple axel on the short, et cetera, et cetera. And they've been there for a while.
Yeah. Hmm.
And that's why they have had the freedom to go out and tackle these high-value technical elements. So, you know, right now the throw triple axel in the short program and making sure that the Lutzes are getting done with a high grade of execution are a big thing for them, just so that they can make sure that they're – I think they want to go into the World Championships feeling like they have the most momentum. Obviously, they are the reigning world champions, but – you know, that world title goes out the door the second the new season starts, and I
right.
think that's how they approach things. I don't think you can go to world saying I'm defending something, because it's not like you have that trophy locked away in your basement. You have to go
have
out
to
there
earn
and
it
get
again.
It again
yeah.
every
yeah.
time, and that's how they approach it.
Hmm. Well, I'm lucky enough to be joined by John Coughlin here on Ice Talk. We are transitioning to NHK Trophy this coming weekend in Sapporo, Japan. The pairs field shaping up to be a great one. John, this dance field, it really is world class. Tessa Virtue and Scott Moore, Anna Capolina and Luca Lenote, and then of course the French team, Gabriella Papadakis and Guillaume Cizeron. That is three world championship winning teams all at one Grand Prix, and those are just the top three. You also have Caitlin Hayek and Jean-Luc Baker from the U.S. there, and a Russian dance team as well. So I don't even know where to start. Where would you start with that, John?
You know, with respect to Capellini and Lenote, I think they're a fantastic team. I think everyone's looking at the showdown between the French and the Canadians.
Yep.
And I'm very interested to see how the shorts are received when they go head-to-head. I wasn't expecting to say this because I feel that Papadakis and Cizeron are so good at portraying their passion through their movement, but I actually find Virtue and Moore's short dance to be more genuine, and I don't know if it's that, you know, they're just a little more comfortable in that style. Maybe it's the music selection, but I got goosebumps when I watched them skate that short dance in Canada, and maybe that was because they were, you know, skating at home, and it was kind of the big return to competition for them. But I have a feeling that with all things being equal, if they both skate clean, I see the Canadians having a slight edge coming out of the short program, which would send the entire ice dance world into a tizzy, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you look at what they produced earlier this season, they were at two separate events, obviously, but 4 points separates them. Papadakis and Cizeron, a 193, and Virtue Moyer, a 189 earlier this season. We've had both of them on Ice Talk, John, this season, and it's been so interesting to hear the impressions of each other, because they're training together now. And I think it's been a very interesting glimpse for the French team to look at Tessa and Scott. I think a team that they very much looked up to for a long time. But as the season goes, where does the benefit lie? To me, I feel like it lies with Tessa and Scott because of them coming off of the time away that they had.
I think it definitely, the benefit favors Tessa and Scott because, you know, to your point, there was a layoff from competition. I happened to stumble into the same box at the World Championships that they were sitting in watching the event, and they were watching the French skate, and you could tell the attentiveness to what was going on the ice was all over Tessa and Scott's face. I think they have a respect for what Papadakis and Cizeron have been able to do with ice dance, but you know, they've always been strategic in training with some of their chief competition, and I think that brings a sense of healthy urgency to your training every day if you're looking at what the goal is. So I think it's brought out the best in them, and I don't think that they would be at the same level of readiness if they were training in a vacuum without having to stare at the world champions every day.
Yeah, so hot take for you is that if you feel like if Vertu and Moore come out and deliver, they could walk away over the world champs.
Well, yeah. I mean, you look at you mentioned the point spread between them. They were at two different events, and you said it was 4 points. But you have to remember, I'm pretty sure they had a pretty big twizzle error in the free
mm-hmm,
dance.
Mm-hmm.
So that wasn't the best that Tessa and Scott can do. There were points left on the table. So I hope that they both skate clean, because I think it would be quite a showdown.
Well, and hanging in the balance this coming weekend, too, is how those Grand Prix final fields are going to shape up. We obviously know a few of the members from each discipline that will land there. But let's wrap up here, John, at the singles front. We're obviously going to see Yuzuru Hanyu in the men's event. And we also get to see quite a few Americans, Jason Brown skating, Nathan Chen skating. They both have shots at that Grand Prix final. Grant Hochstein will be there. And we mentioned earlier, Mirai Nagasu, Karen Chen will be there as well. Where does your eye go, John, for the singles field as far as this weekend comes?
Well, Nathan's a little behind the eight ball. He has 9 points in the Grand Prix standings right now, so he would almost need to win this event.
Yeah, one or two, I think. Yep, and then he'd need some help if he was second.
Yep,
yep.
Exactly. So a win or a second and some help would do it for him. But it's absolutely possible with the technical content that he has right now, and it's by design. I don't feel that he's as connected to the choreography in his program, but it's understandable with the ambitious content that he's going for technically. If he skates clean and has the legs in him to really perform the program that we know him to be capable of doing, I mean, it's not that Nathan Chen can't be a component skater. He has years of dance training. He's fantastic in his movement. But when you're attempting, you know, quad lutz and quad flip in the short program and that many quads in the free skate, it takes a lot of energy, and you have to kind of train those element run-throughs before you can get to where it becomes a performance. If he hits all of that, it's absolutely possible that he wins, but it's a tall order whenever you say Yuzuru Hanyu's in the field.
Yeah. How much do you think Nathan could have taken from what he did in Paris? I mean, that the short was absolutely clean and looked great, and then he had some struggles in the free. I think it caught up with him a little bit, but I also think that that's where it helps him. Being in Marina's stable and being with Patrick Chan, I think he's just, you know, he's a sponge at this point, soaking in all that experience.
Well, I think it's absolutely possible for him to improve the result of the free skate, especially if you look at his training mate, Patrick Chan, and what he was able to do Grand Prix over Grand Prix in the free skate. So that's something that is on Nathan's radar. I'm sure he would love to make the Grand Prix final, but I think he would love to make it just because it's another opportunity for mileage on that very ambitious free skate. For me, the exciting thing will be to watch Jason Brown. We watch Adam Rapon come out and get full rotational credit on a quad, and that was a huge breakthrough for Adam, and I think that he has all the momentum in the world as the U.S. men's skater, because he switched free skates and is doing this program that was this beautiful exhibition program that everyone was whispering to him, you need to make this your free skate, you need to make this your free skate, and he finally did it, and it's connecting on a level that the previous program, I don't think, you know, no disrespect to Adam's skating, but that program just wasn't doing it for him. And he's in a different place now. He's obviously confident on that quad toe. So Jason needs to answer the bell now and go put out some quad toes on one foot, and if he does that, mm-hmm. he could be in the Grand Prix final conversation.
And John, does Yuzuru Hanyu have to answer any bells? I mean, looking at the top 10 scores of the season, his name doesn't appear there. He obviously did not have the skate that he wanted at Skate Canada, but I think as brilliant as Hanyu can be, he also can feel and look troubled at these big events too.
I think he's a very emotional skater, and I say that with the utmost respect. I think he's one of the most brilliant, talented skaters the men's discipline has ever seen, but you watch him skate, and when he's in the zone, everybody else might as well go home because it's almost demoralizing to the rest of the men's field when he's in that place. But conversely, if he starts having troubles, you can see the body language change. He kind of hockey skates down the ice, or he has those falls where he kind of goes a little ragdoll on the landing, and it's a little bit on the dramatic side, and that's because he wears his heart on his sleeve. And I don't think there's anyone in the world that skates for everyone as much as he does. So I think he takes it very personally when things aren't going well, but he's very determined. You know, he has all of the titles that he's ever going to need, so he's skating just to see where he can take the sport, and he's very stubborn about that quad loop, and I think he's going to keep trying it until it becomes something that he can call in his back pocket, and he's going to need it with, you know, all the quads that we're seeing from Chen and Boyang Jin and all those people.
On the women's side, John, joining the Americans, Nagasu and Chen, Maria Satskova, the young Russian that we saw a couple weeks ago deliver a big Grand Prix performance. Anna Pogorelia, of course, she has emerged, I think, as one of the best in the world. Satoko Miyahara will be there in front of the home crowd, as will Wakaba Higuchi. So, John, where does, you know, do you sort of give anyone the nod aside from the two Russians to really take this event and make it their own?
Satoko Miyahara is one of my favorite skaters just on her pure skating ability. It was unfortunate to watch her lose an entire step sequence at her first Grand Prix over kind of a technicality of the shape of it. There's this very vague rule about the shape of a step sequence. It doesn't have to be straight line. It doesn't have to be circular. It doesn't have to be any particular shape, but it just has to have full ice coverage. And for some reason, it was decided by the tech panel that hers didn't meet that criteria, and it was awarded no value. So that was a big hit to her. But on any given day, I think she can compete with the best in the world. You talked about Satskova, and I compare her as the Russian version of Mai Mihara, where she's just kind of that little wonder kid that came up out of nowhere and skates beyond her years and unaffected by the moment. But you have to think that Pogorelia has the edge here in this event, just on her track record and experience. But, I mean, really a stacked field when you look at it from top to bottom, including the American.
Yeah, and I'm just going to guess there will be a few people in the crowd in Sapporo, Japan.
Yeah, just a couple. Those fans... Those fans travel well to all corners of the globe, so to be in their backyard,
yeah, exactly.
Might as well be Japanese nationals.
All right, well, John Coughlin, thank you so much for joining us here on Ice Talk, and a big happy Thanksgiving to you.
Thank you. Same to you, Nick. You take care.
Absolutely. Well, that was John Coughlin right here on Ice Talk. We're talking all things Cup of China and then previewing NHK Trophy. And I'm joined next by a guest that is making her debut at the Grand Prix Final in just a couple minutes. It's Canadian Caitlin Osmond.
Hi, I'm Patrick Chan, and you're listening to Ice Talk.
Well, Caitlin Osmond, fresh off qualifying for the Grand Prix Final, welcome to Ice Talk. And you were just telling me it wasn't as a tough a journey home as I would have thought. Beijing to Edmonton's a pretty easy travel day.
Yeah, it's definitely an easy travel day, only one stop in Vancouver. It's just a long flight.
Yeah, seriously. I think I would be a little bit amiss, Caitlin, if I didn't ask you about qualifying for the Grand Prix Final. Silver medal at Cup of China this weekend. How does it feel to see your name on that Grand Prix Final list?
It's so exciting. My goal this year was to just make it to my two Grand Prix, do really well at both, and just skate for myself and not worry about the placements. And that's exactly what I did. So to be able to actually make the Grand Prix final because of it, I'm still in disbelief for it.
And the first Canadian woman to do so since the great Joni Rochette in 2009. So I feel like that's got to feel pretty good too.
It's definitely a very rewarding feeling.
I think the curiosity for me and a lot of people out there, Caitlin, is, you know, you have that injury, which I want to talk about in just a minute, but where's the confidence come from this season? Because not only have you two silver medals in your pocket from the Grand Prix, but that gold medal at Finlandia Trophy too.
This season, I just feel a lot better about myself. Last year was rocky, but the way I finished at Four Continents really gave me a boost of confidence, and I just went with that throughout my whole off season. I did Stars on Ice, and I skated really good on Stars on Ice, which also helped. And then all summer, I really just focused on my training and focused on what I can do to make me a better skater. And I did small summer competitions just to get started on my season. And I've also started working with a sports psychologist, which just definitely helps my confidence.
Wow. When did you start with the psychologist?
More like at the beginning of September.
Yeah. And you feel like that's made a big impact?
Yeah, it's already made such a huge impact in my practice and in competitions.
Wow. Well, you came off the 2014 Olympics. You were two-time reigning national champion in Canada and then had that unfortunate injury in September of 2014. How much did you have to be patient in letting that injury see itself through and then the comeback slowly but surely to where you are today? Because last season, I think, was a season of ups and downs for you too.
Yeah, the injury in 2014 was definitely a really slow process, and I definitely had to be patient with it, just because if I tried to force it, it would just hurt more. So I had to be really patient with it and letting it heal on its own. No matter how much physio or how much rehab I did on it, it was really time. Time was the only thing that would let it heal. So I had to be really patient with that and let it, and then slowly get back into my skating and do so many small things. And it actually helped a lot with my training and the fact that I was able to regroup and refocus and actually learn all my jumps and even skating skills. I got to learn everything again, perfect the technique on all my jumps. And that's something I struggled with last year, was being able to do it in competition. I could do it in practice, no problem, but at competition, right, I had trouble. But I think that was just more of a confidence thing and not fully feeling ready. It was more of a mental injury coming back from that injury than it was a physical.
Yeah. I mean, that's fascinating to me that, you know, you came back last season and certainly didn't have a bad season by any means. You missed out on the world championships by, I think, 0.12 of a point. But how challenging was that for you, or how much did you feel like you had to remind yourself of the process? Because now I feel like we're really starting to see the skater not only that you were 2 years ago, but a more mature and athletic. And John Coughlin was just on, called you a very charismatic skater. It feels like you're coming into your own, and perhaps the injury even helped you with that.
It did help. The year I was injured, I refused to watch anything skating related.
Really?
And I think that was good, with the fact that it was a great refresher when I came back to the rink to train. I felt like I was skating for myself and not skating for what I've seen on TV. Last year when I was competing, I think I thought going into competition, no matter how much I said that I wanted to skate and just skate the way I do in practice, there was always the feeling of I want to get back to where I was, and that feeling was continuously trying to push me, and it was something that I guess I just wasn't fully ready for last year. But coming third at Nationals last year was a great kick in the butt or eye-opener or whatever way you want to say it. It just woke me up finally after the year of not competing and then the year of roller coaster rides, and it just got me back to myself and back to feeling a feeling that I didn't want to feel ever again. So now I'm just able to focus on myself more, and even being in first after a program or being in second after a program at a competition, the only thought going through my head is that I want to skate a better long program than I did at the competition before.
Hmm.
So that has definitely helped and definitely brought me back to myself and made me feel more comfortable on the ice.
And there's been Gabrielle Dahlman and Alain Chatron have been two skaters that have really emerged in Canada as strong international presences. Have they pushed you too, Caitlin, or their presence? Have they helped sort of, you know, you've got to make sure that you're not only keeping pace with them, but I'm sure trying to top them as well?
Yeah, definitely having them as competitors is amazing. Last year at Nationals, they skated phenomenally, and they deserve to both go to Worlds last year. And even now, they've been doing great in competitions this season, and it's continuously push for each of us to keep being on top of our game and being the best that we can be at every single competition. And being able to have that competition within Canada is really a great motivation and great excitement. Because the more that we have that competition in Canada, the more we compete at a world level.
So, Caitlin, we were talking a little bit about that injury and then what you had to go through last season. But tell me about your focus this season. What have you specifically been working on in practice? And what have you been both happiest with, but also then needs a little bit of work, too?
In practice, I've been definitely just working on making sure each of my jumps are as perfect as they can get, that the technique is there, that they're easy, that they're clean, and then getting them into my run-throughs at home and getting as many clean run-throughs as I possibly can in practice and just going with that in my competitions. And that has been my goal, to feel the exact same way that I do in practice as I do in competitions and to be able to skate the way I do in practice while I'm competing. And so far this year, that is exactly the way I've been feeling, and my goal has been to be consistent throughout the season and to keep building on each event. So I think I've done that pretty well so far this year, especially making it to the Grand Prix final was sort of a goal in the back of my head that I refused to admit that I had until it actually happened.
okay, that's cool.
But overall, there's still a lot of things that I need to work on. I definitely need to work on the consistency in my long program and just to be able to keep adding more and more triples at each competition. Mm-hmm. I do really want to get to a 7-triple long program in competition. I've done it a few times now in practice, and I really want to do it in competition.
It seems like things are very much tailored and set up the way you want them in Edmonton, too. You work with Coach Ravi Walia, and it's not – I mean, Edmonton – is by no means a skating hub, but it feels like you've set up a place there that you're very comfortable in too, Caitlin.
Yeah, I'm really comfortable. Edmonton for me is truly home. Well, it has been for the last 10 years. So I'm really comfortable with the way things are. I love working with Ravi. He's made me grow as a skater so well. And he knows the way I train best and which ways will work in the future to be able to keep training at my best, and I have a great physio and doctor and my personal trainer, my ballet trainer. I just have so many people here that have helped me so much, and it works really great having it here all in Edmonton.
And as much as you want to share, you're comfortable sharing, tell me a little bit about what you and the sports psychologist talk about. I mean, are you going through your programs, or how does that work?
Well, first when I first started working with her, we were getting over the underlying issues that I didn't even know I had still from my injury. The things that I thought I was fine with that apparently I really didn't need help with. So we got over the underlying issues as to why my confidence had dropped so much in the last year and why I didn't feel comfortable competing anymore. And so once we got over that, we just worked on how to stay focused in competition and how to remain the same way I feel in practice as I do in competitions. And we've just gone through parts of my program to figure out when I can best breathe, when I can best refocus, if something isn't going well, if something's going really well, just working out ways on how I deal with everything.
Hmm. Now, at my Ice Network colleague Lynn Rutherford was up at Skate Canada covering the event, and she was telling me that you were talking about faking it till you make it. Do you feel like this season now you've made it? You're back. Or is this still Caitlin? Is it still Caitlin Osmond faking it? Because you're doing a pretty good job of faking it.
I do feel a lot more confident than I did at the beginning of the season, just with being able to compete and feel good about my competitions has definitely helped. But I'm still definitely a little nervous going into competitions, which is something I never had to deal with when I was younger, that I've just developed as I got older. And so the main reason I said I fake it till I make it wasn't because I was losing the confidence in my program. It was more of a fact that the program is, I was mostly talking about my short program then, and my short program is about such a confident character, and it just made me feel confident doing it. So that's how I meant that I said fake it till I make it, is that I can be as nervous or anything, but if I engage into that role, it gives me that confidence.
It's interesting you brought up nerves and how they've changed over your career, because I wanted to ask you a little bit about your age. You're 21 now, which is by no means old in real life, but in skating, it's pushing the older side of things. Does age matter to you, or what else has changed in your career that you felt like, you know, you've had to readjust how you train for your body, or what's gotten different now that you're into your 20s?
Definitely being in my 20s makes me a little older in the skating world. Overall, I feel like I'm more mature than I was when I was 16. I can play more confident roles and more and be able to engage in the storyline of stories a lot better now that I more know of what the feelings are. And I also know that in practice I train a lot better than I did when I was 16 or 17. I train at a much higher quality instead of quantity, and I make every practice count so that my body can keep up with the training and keep up with continuously doing better.
How much, I mean, you know, you become the first Canadian woman in 7 years to go to the Grand Prix final. How much is there a connection with you and Joni Rochette, or I know that you've worked with Jeff Buttle in the past, some choreography, or where do you shake out as far as having a nice connection with these other Canadian skaters?
Being on Stars on Ice last year and in the past has been amazing, to be able to work with these top skaters. Just being alongside them in a show helps me perform at my best, because I don't want to feel like a weak link against all these amazing, amazing competitors. And I truthfully think that has actually helped me grow as a skater, just trying to keep up with world champions and Olympic champions like Jeffrey Buttle and Joanie. And definitely having Jeff choreograph my long program this year. He did amazing work, and it so far worked really well in competition, and it just makes me look more like a more mature skater than I have in the past.
No, you can see it and feel it. I felt, especially this weekend, I felt like you were skating like a mature skater, and I think the judges probably felt as well, and the people that were watching along in Beijing.
Thank you.
So Caitlin, each week we ask people to submit questions using hashtag Ice Talk, and we've got a question from a Twitter user named Lucy Lerp. She's wondering about the technique tips that you might offer on your jumps. She's noting that they look bigger and higher this season, and it sounds like from earlier that you've been working plenty on them.
I have been working on my technique quite a bit. And it's actually really funny that she mentions that they look bigger and higher for the fact that I'm actually trying to make my jumps a little bit smaller right now.
Really?
I've always been a really big jumper. They just were often really uncontrolled jumps that I couldn't control in competition with the extra adrenaline that I had going through my system. So I'm working on making them a little bit more smaller, more compact, and a little just more over top of my feet so that they can become more consistent.
Yeah, absolutely. And what, I mean, would you offer her tips as far as finding that consistency?
Yeah, for consistency, I always, my biggest technique tip is to stay relaxed. To not feel like you're up in your shoulders, or the more up in your shoulders you feel going into a jump means the less that you feel into the ice. So I always try to stay really relaxed and feel that all your weight is over the leg that's jumping and doing all the work. The more that you're over the top of the leg that is doing the work, the more that leg can function. If you stay a little bit more forward, you just stay a little bit more balanced when you land.
Nice. Some good tips here from Coach Caitlin. Well, let's wrap up, Caitlin. We do another segment here on Ice Talk. It's called Fire and Ice. I'm going to give you quick questions, and you're just going to answer whatever comes to mind, okay?
Okay.
Cool. What is your go-to dessert when you cheat on your regiment? What do you eat?
Ice cream.
Ice cream. What kind?
Any kind.
What's your favorite or most random app that you have on your phone?
My most random app on my phone. I have a lot of gaming apps.
Do you? What do you play?
At the moment, my best game is called Best Themes.
And how are you doing at said game?
I'm doing really well at it. I tend to get really addicted to games.
What's it called again?
Best Themes.
Who would play you in the Caitlin Osmond biopic, Caitlin Osmond movie?
A really good question. I've been compared to Lily Collins in the past.
Okay, there you go. Finish the sentence. I'd love my next vacation to be...
in Mexico.
There you go. What's your favorite sport other than skating?
I love to watch hockey. To play a sport, I couldn't give you an answer there.
Really? Just skating for you?
Just skating. I'm really uncoordinated when it comes to anything else.
Okay, well, you're pretty coordinated in skating, so that's okay. If I were to visit Edmonton, where's the first place you'd want to take me?
Fort Edmonton Park.
And why?
It's a really cool, it's a park, but it's more of a history park, and it brings you through the different decades of Edmonton.
And what is your favorite thing to do backstage to pass the time at a competition?
Play the games on my phone.
Exactly. We're going full circle. Well, Caitlin Osmond, thank you for joining us on Ice Talk. And I have to say, another huge congratulations. Good luck at Grand Prix Final.
Thank you.
Thank you. That was Caitlin Osmond joining us here on Ice Talk. She heads to Marseille in France in just a few weeks for the Grand Prix Final. That wraps up episode 7 of Ice Talk here on Ice Network. I'm Nick McCarville, and this week we were joined by John Coughlin and Caitlin Osmond talking all things Cup of China, where Caitlin sealed her spot at the Grand Prix Final, and John was helping us preview NHK Trophy, which is to come this weekend in Sapporo, Japan. Next week, more Grand Prix finalists on the show. The Ship Sips, Maya and Alex Shibutani, will join us. And I'll also have a guest in studio, NBC Olympics sports writer Nick Sicardi. It'll be the Nick and Nick show for half of it on episode 8 of Ice Talk. That will be next week. We want you guys to make sure you get your voices heard on Ice Talk. Use the hashtag Ice Talk on social media to let us know questions, comments, concerns, etc. Or tweet at me at Nick McCarville or at Ice Network. You can, of course, download our episodes on iTunes, or just head to icenetwork.com. We're usually on the homepage, or you can find us in the fans section. From our studio in downtown Manhattan, a big thanks to my producer, Kate Sullivan, and of course to my guests this week, John Coughlin and Caitlin Osmond. Thank you so much for taking us for a spin, and we'll talk to you guys soon.